our opportunities are under us, black and brown. And even to the point where there needs to be immigration reform to really to lift the country, because there's a evaporating middle class, right? And then of course there are more births and people who are black and brown. America will become a minority majority country by what, 2050? So we got to start, you know, realigning our conscience to how do we lift up, because that will lift America.
Hello, my name is Soyini Koch, and welcome to the second season of Capitalism Done Right, brought to you by CEO Exclusive and Conscious Capitalism of Atlanta. One conversation at a time, one CEO at a time, we're exploring the capitalism side of conscious capitalism, which is how real businesses are investing in their relationships with all their stakeholders and employing the tenets of conscious capitalism in such a way that it creates profits. In other words, capitalism done right. And in this episode, I'm with the president and co-owner of the Herman Russell family of companies, Jerome Russell. And I met Jerome last March at a conscious capitalism event, and I could not wait to interview him. I know his assistant, Sandra, is probably like, oh my God, when is this woman going to stop calling me? But Herman Russell companies are one of the companies that it's like in the fiber of Atlanta. For example, they helped build the Atlanta airport, which of course is now the busiest airport in the world. And much like Stuckey's, they were conscious capitalists before there was even a word for it. And what I love about this interview is he discusses, I think, the sharpest, clearest example of the profitability of conscious capitalism that I've heard yet. So listen to the show to see if you agree with me. Enjoy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really delighted to spend this morning with Jerome Russell, president and co-owner of the Russell family of companies. Part of the reason I'm so excited is that the Russell family has been a part of like Atlanta history and Atlanta DNA for a long time. They've also been doing really, really well by doing great things in the community. This is not new for them, you know, the way that it may be for a lot of people. And, you know, we have this name for it called conscious capitalism, but they've been doing it for a long time. And so, Jerome, I would love for you to share with the audience from your perspective and, you know, from your family history, what the actual payoff, you know, that's what the subject of this podcast is. What is the economic, financial, hardcore, money in the hand payoff of conscious capitalism or doing good things in the community, for example?
Well, we're sitting right here at 504 Fair Street, where it all started in 1952. So we have taken this building that we built multiple businesses in, incubated entrepreneurs like Egbert Perry, T. Dallas Smith, Noel Khalil.
Wow.
And Artis Johnson. And I can keep naming them. They all are African American. They all have gone out and built successful businesses, employed multiple people. So the Russell Innovation Center for Entrepreneurship is a 2.0 of what who we are.
And I'm assuming that all of those businesses were for-profit businesses.
Yes.
So they weren't, you know, just doing good and not generating a profit, right? They were actually have been very, very profitable as they've been doing all these good things.
Absolutely.
So can you give our audience like a more recent example and maybe go down a little bit into like a specific case where you made a decision that actually benefited the community, benefited the employees, for example, benefited you or, you know, the company through generating profits. Can you give us like a double click and just go down a little bit and give us maybe a specific example?
Oh, God. So, you know, you know, if you're profitable, you can grow and you can invest. So we believe that the more we can provide, if we're a profitable enterprise, it provides the opportunity to provide opportunities for others, okay? And provides opportunity to put people who normally may not have that opportunity, that may look like me, may look like you, an opportunity to shine. For example, I was going to catch a flight to, I don't know where I was going, but I was coming down at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, coming down the escalator, catch the train, made eye contact with someone who I knew. I didn't exactly know who he was. I said, I've seen him. So he waits for me to come down the escalator. And I noticed he has the Concessions International shirt on, which is one of our companies. Mm-hmm. So I just tell him, I said, you all are doing a phenomenal job at the airport and considering the pandemic, blah, blah, blah. And he says, he told me, he says, thank you for providing the opportunity. I mean, I was really humbled. And he went on to say that he runs the Sweetwater Bar on 831 and he feels like an owner. And he says that he was just so grateful that we had provided, the family had provided the opportunity for him to have that type of feeling. I mean, it really, really touched me.
Right. And there's some portion of the economic benefit or profit of that business that flows upward to the Russell companies, yes?
Correct. Right. Yeah. But what, so I see, and they are, because I'm watching the numbers. I'm watching the numbers.
Right, he's watching the numbers.
I'm watching the numbers, but don't really, you know, I'm watching numbers. Right? So when a human being comes and articulates something like that to me, you know, just a purely, we just happen to randomly run into each other. Mm-hmm. And I felt like he blessed me.
That's what we love to hear.
So it was pretty special.
Yeah. I mean, and that's exactly the kind of virtuous cycle that we hope to create through these conversations and through the conscious business movement. But sometimes you hear about companies or instances where it's not that easy, right? Where it's not all rainbows and butterflies and unicorns, where tough decisions need to be made, where it's not necessarily transparent that, you know, if I make this decision that is humane, that, you know, is for the good, the greater good, that it's going to have the financial payoff. Do you have a thought or maybe even an example of the times when it's not that straightforward, or you maybe have to go on faith a little bit that doing the right, the quote, right thing or doing the humane thing is going to turn out financially?
Well, I think it comes down to the values
of
the organization. So we have we're family business, and the owners are family, and we're engaged, and the family values started with my mother and father. Mm. So when you're in that position, or when you're in a position where you have values, the decision, those difficult decisions, you rely on your values to make the decisions, okay? Mm. And fortunately, we're diversified. You know, I think one of the things that make us really unique as a family business, we're not a family business that's concentrated in one particular industry or business. Mm. We have like 3 to 4 to 5 that allow us the diversification. So maybe when one's not doing good, we have the other. So therefore we can lean on that to carry everything forward. So we've been blessed to be able to have a company that's diversified. And so when sometimes those decisions we have to make, we can kind of, you know, we can hold on or we can do it for the better, the greater good. Okay. So in some cases, some companies, they don't have those values. It's black and white.
All money.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so I guess for what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure that I raise this up, you know, in this conversation and also for our audience, that you're saying that sometimes you have the ability, but sometimes you do trade off short-term economic interest or profits for these other values.
Correct.
Yeah. Sometimes you make the choice, like you're going to give up money in the short term, not forever, because like you said, you got to be profitable, but you give up money in the short term for these other values.
Right.
What are some of the other values that you see that you said, okay, we're going to put the finances on hold for a second, or we're going to, you know, make a trade-off here. What are some of those values that you think are really important?
You know, the first one that comes is faith. You know, you have to have some belief that there's a greater power and that will prevail. So I think faith is one. Integrity, honesty.
Those are good ones.
Yeah, I mean, those are the basis of being able to really, you know, do what you say you're going to do, act the way you say, you know, act the way you know, let your actions speak.
And so as we think about the Russell, you know, Innovation Center, this center, I think that it's important that we understand that this feels to me like you're one of your platforms, one of the ways in which you are promoting that extended stakeholder, conscious, integrated way of doing business. Would you share for us a little bit more about some of the ways in which the Russell Innovation Center is doing that?
Wow, that's a very good question. Wow. So,
because I can feel your heart is in this place.
Yeah. That's what it's the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It
is the spirit. It really,
there's a spirit that when you walk in here, that prevails, and a lot of it I think has to do with Jay. Okay, because mm-hmm. when we Jay Bale is the CEO, right?
Okay.
So when we decided to kind of drop this into a not-for-profit, and we kind of had a plan on what we were going to stand for. And then we went out and said, hey, we got to get someone to run this. And we talked to different people. We had a search firm. He just came out, you know, really as kind of the inspiration in his view on what we needed, his story mm-hmm. relating to who we are and what we was trying to accomplish. And it's just been a rocket mm-hmm. ride since. And I mean, we're growing right now. We were a startup. Now we are entering into a really mature business, but we're still growing at a real rapid pace.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I heard that you had like all kinds of people. You have the UPS involved, CVS. You've had like multiple stages in here just in the week. You have a great event here tonight. So yeah, I mean, the growth is pretty obvious.
Yeah. So I'll just like last night. You know, Jamie Dimon was in town,
mm-hmm.
and you know he has.
This is
become,
the CEO of JP.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, he's the CEO of JP Morgan.
Yeah.
Just for example, he says he has the crowd. He says, "What do y'all think the crowd? What do y'all think we move a day in? You know, movement of cash." Somebody said a couple of billion. He said $10 trillion. So that's the movement because they're a worldwide company. So he gave a perspective of the United States and the world. And the United States is, you know, a great country, but we also have our challenges.
Certainly.
And our opportunities are under us, black and brown.
Mm.
And even to the point where there needs to be immigration reform to really to lift the country. Because there's a evaporating middle class.
Mm.
Right. And then, of course, there are more births in people who are black and brown. So America will become a minority majority country by, 2050?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to start, realigning our conscious to how do we lift up, because that will lift America.
And so I think this is a really great point that I want to mm-hmm. make sure everybody understands. So you all have been doing that since the beginning of the company.
Correct.
Just as that. So the example that you gave of the person in the airport
mm-hmm.
is an example of exactly what you just said, that Jamie Dimon just seems like he's just getting onto.
Correct.
You all have been onto it for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, I want you to confirm this. This is exactly how you've grown.
Absolutely.
Right. So this virtuous cycle that we are now giving a name, calling it conscious capitalism, right, has been around. And it is like a universal truth, like you said. You know, when you lift up people and you give them opportunities, those opportunities are profitable. They it's not that you're just, it's not charity.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I would love for you to kind of expand on how you can see other companies that may just be getting onto this, that, you know, Russell has been doing this and has grown profitably through doing that for years.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to other CEOs as they're looking at this, like, oh my God, we should lift up people. I mean, right. It seems like it would be obvious. So if you were sitting down with Jamie and saying, hey, listen, we've been doing this for 50 years. What would be your next statement? What would you say to him afterwards?
Well, it's not an entitlement. I think that's where we sometimes in the politics.
Right.
It's called entitlements. I think it's maybe it should be renamed, you know, opportunities.
Or investment.
Yeah, investment.
You're investing in humans.
Here are the numbers. I think one of the things that I realize is the more I get into here, we're not telling the story around the numbers. I mean, the data. The data is there.
Well, tell us.
This is
the story.
Yeah. So the data, I think the data, depending on where you are, particularly in the South, is the, you know, we have, the data, there's a disparity of wealth. That's mm-hmm. why this inflation thing is big, because inflation favors those who have.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it makes it tough for those who don't have.
Right.
So if it continues to accelerate at a very fast pace, it creates just more disparity mm-hmm. in the system. So, I think since your question was around CEOs, I think a lot of it has to do with acknowledging first there's a problem, and then there's a solution. And then from there,
and the solution is not a do-gooder solution. It's not, you're not doing it necessarily out of the
sure. It's not an entitlement,
right?
Yeah, you have to structure it as an upward mobility opportunity. And then we have to also be brutally honest about race. Okay, mm-hmm. you cannot deal with this without addressing the race issue. And the race issue.
Well, there are many race issues. So which specific race issue are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you know, America, it tends to, you know, come down to, you know, black and white mm-hmm. slavery and mm-hmm. what happened around that. And then you have, you have Hispanics who, you know, were indigenous to, you know, particularly the southern part. And some of the, you know, they were wars fought, mm. what, 100 some years ago to get land disputes settled and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that we have to figure out a way to create this uncomfortable discussion mm-hmm. in a comfortable, I don't know if you can make it comfortable, but we got to learn how to get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
And that's exactly, I mean, this is exactly what I want. This is the conversation
right.
that I desperately want to have
mm-hmm.
because even in conscious capitalism circles, everybody wants to stay with the sunshine and butterflies and rainbows part of this dialogue without dealing with the dark side, which I don't think you can really do this at all, not in an honest way, if we don't have this very hard conversation.
Correct.
It has to be had. Right? That whenever it comes to talking about this, people don't want to invest in Black people because they think it's an entitlement mm-hmm. rather than seeing us as, you know, the potential to be Herman Russell mm-hmm. or the potential to be, T. Dallas Smith or whatever. Like, people don't see that, right? They see it as a handout or whatever.
Right.
So I would like to have this conversation with you for like 15 years. So what do you think? You said, you know, be honest about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you have a unique perspective on the solution. What is the solution? So if we could have, you and me and other people could have this conversation with Jamie Dimon about mm. like, let's get honest about this. The U.S. economy historically has not wanted to invest in Black people or brown people. The only way to turn this around is to do this. And mm. it's not a handout. It is very profitable. It works. And it will grow the U.S. economy. It will grow individual businesses. It will make people very wealthy. It's not charity. So if you wanted to have that conversation and really get into the solution part of it, what would be the next thing that you would say?
I think we got to really mine the data.
Okay.
The data on consumer spending by ethnicity. And we probably will need to have multiple areas, a metro area. I mean, we're going to an urban society, right? So... and maybe a society of this, I wouldn't say it's rural, but it's people are living in resorts, mm-hmm. right? It's near waters or high end. That is kind of what's happening. You know, I've had some of my white friends say, hey, I'm getting out of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You know, the cold is, it's getting too black. Okay, or crime is bad.
Crime is bad.
Yeah. So they're moving to
Blue Ridge and
Wilmington, North Carolina, or buying
Alpharetta,
a house,
yeah, whatever.
Or Sea Island. I mean, those are going to be kind of getaways, mm-hmm. right? So I think we have to really start. We have to look at the data and start looking out mm-hmm. into the future, and then reverse engineering it back to some type of physical policy that addresses education, healthcare, mm-hmm. Business, and we really have to understand what it means and monitor the activity and the programs that we're going to put in place.
And the ROI.
Right.
And
yes.
prove out the ROI.
Yeah.
That investing in Black and brown and, you know, typically underserved people is not, it actually pays off. It really does.
Right.
It's not just, you know, fairy.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how to, and I'm getting better at it. So gentrification. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the word gentrification is happening here. Normally most people say, well, it's an area where higher income whites are going to move into here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. into areas that maybe traditionally have been run down or maybe mm-hmm. African-American, and it is revived. Okay.
The Beltline.
Yeah, exactly.
For those of you who don't know, you can Google it.
However, I think one thing that I do know is that you can't have communities of poor people. Okay. We have to have areas.
Oh, you can, and they're poor, and they're run down, and all the social ills or whatever.
Yeah, it will continue to, you have to get incomes, mm-hmm. higher incomes into areas. So I think that we need to figure out a way to get Black middle class, maybe Hispanic, working class, middle class people back in, get them engaged in the schools. And I think that's the story we have to start telling, because the way I see it, back in the 70s here in Atlanta, that's how the Black middle class areas evolved. And there was a upward mobility movement of that generation, which is my generation, because I grew up during the 70s, of prosperity. Mm-hmm. Okay, we don't have that now. This generation that we're in now, they're not living in and going and being participating in the public schools. If you have means, you go, and you maybe go to Gwinnett, or you may go to, if you live in Atlanta, you're going to send your kids to private school. And then mm-hmm. you have these charters coming in that are kind of bringing a different flavor to education. So it's just really fragmented right now. Mm-hmm. And that fragmentation is creating stagnation.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So let's go into mm-hmm. the conversation, you know, about wealth inequality and Jamie Dimon and all this, because, like I said, this is the conversation I've really desperately wanted to have. Is if you wanted to have that very difficult conversation about the wealth inequality, because even in our last Conscious Capitalism, Conscious Tuesdays here in the Rice Center, we had a Conscious mm-hmm. Capitalism event. It came right up. You know, like Atlanta has the biggest wealth disparity, I think, of any major metropolitan area in the country. It's a legacy of slavery. We know that, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. How would you start to have this? Because I think this is the conversation that I want to begin to mm-hmm. have with people in a very honest way around the wealth inequality and, you know, investing in underserved communities and that actually being a virtuous cycle. How would you have that conversation?
How would begin to have the difficult
conversation?
Well, my instincts tell me that the data is clearly, well, the data's out there that wealthy, that, you know, it's not, what is it, 90-10, 10% on, or 20% controls 80%. I think it's right now maybe 5% control 95%. Mm-hmm. So I think that gap is closing. And I think that we have to just go in and, you know, be real with the mm-hmm. data. It's data.
Well, if I were going to do the analysis, yes. and I was going to get the meeting with Jamie and say, like, listen, you know, we have to look at this. This is something that Conscious Capitalism mm-hmm. is committed to fixing. We actually want to address this. What specific analysis would you have us do? What would you have us look at? Is it the wealth distribution? But then also, is it something around, you know, is it specific anecdotes like T. Dallas Smith or even this gentleman at the airport and say, you know, this is how much was invested and here's how many jobs he's creating? You're laughing at
that. We're laughing because I'm figuring it out.
Okay.
I mean,
well, we're figuring it out.
Yeah, we're all figuring out.
This is what we're figuring out.
I'm trying to figure out. My basic premise is I think Metro Atlanta is a great laboratory to start, right? So I think we take the 10 county area because they have changed dramatically demographically. Mm-hmm. Gwinnett, Cobb has happened real quick, right? Okay, we changed Georgia, changed the elections, particularly at the Senate level, right? Think about it. This is a Southern state, two Democratic, one Jewish, one Black in the Senate. In the South, and it's all because of Metro Atlanta, hands down, because of just the demographics and the voter registration that has been accomplished. So I think we go and we take a designated area, and we go all in on the household, who owns, who's renting, income, wealth. Okay, most of the wealth for most people are going to be in the house. Okay, and maybe some investments if they're working 401k. Okay, we really figure out by race what's going on and then do the comparisons. And then I think the other piece we do is we go and look at consumer, how we're spending our money. Okay, so we know African Americans are spending more disproportionate amount of their income on beauty, health, and in those items because hair salons, beauty supply, it amazes me. I'm in the real estate business. If you lease to a hair salon, barbershop, or a beauty supply, it's like a long-term lease, right? So, because we're spending money on certain things. You get all of that data. And then we also start looking at the public, what's going on with the tax revenue, because these are areas that have majority, Gwinnett, 5 commissioners, 3 are Black. Cobb, 5 commissioners, 3 are Black. Okay, how do you take that public policy and political strength and turn it into a real strength that lifts not just Black people, but lifts the whole community.
Yeah, lifts the whole city, the whole whatever. And I love that. Yeah. I also agree that Atlanta's a laboratory. It really is. And we were even talking about this in our last strategy session for the chapter. Like, I really want us to do conscious capitalism. It's one thing to have these conversations. I think they're beautiful. Obviously, you can tell I'm really passionate about it. But I also want us to actually do conscious capitalism, like to do this thing that you're talking about. I would like us 5 years from now to do this, like to create the stakeholder map and actually do this so that Atlanta is like a shining example of these principles, like that where we actually do these things and they work. So that's, just a strong.
Yeah. The other one is Delta. I think Delta and the airport.
Okay.
I think if we dive deep into the airport and we start looking at the direct and indirect jobs and the wealth that an airport has created, particularly for people of color, and whether it's employment, whether it's owning a business, I think it would be a staggering number.
That's a good roadmap for us.
Yeah, because Delta's employment base in Atlanta is what, close to 30% African American, and then we can't. There was a Rotary had a session that Hispanics will be in 2050, Metro Atlanta, I think it will be 25% Hispanic, 20, maybe 28% Black, 30. It's a majority. We're majority, minority majority, but 2050. So we also got to aware of those trends too, because that's the future.
Yeah, it is. Atlanta has like 150 countries represented in them or more in the metro area. So I think, once again, this makes Atlanta a perfect laboratory for us to, in this conversation about equality and distribution of wealth and distribution of resources to get beyond Black and white, because it's no longer Black and white. We have to consider all the different segmentations of diversity. There's age diversity, there's racial diversity, there's gender diversity, there's ideological diversity, all of those things. We need to bring everybody along. I mean, that's certainly my strong commitment and passion.
Right.
And to lift everybody.
And then, you just build off of that, and then you hopefully, once you get the data, you can start taking it to other parts mm-hmm. of the world. I mean, we're the best laboratory for this around economic diversity uplift.
Yeah, very good. So, well, certainly I would love to have this conversation with you until we actually transform Atlanta into this wonderful conscious place that we are, we're striving for. But, I think our time's up. So, audience, I've been here with Jerome Russell, president and co-owner of the Russell Family Companies, and it's been a great morning with you on Capitalism Done Right. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Did you hear Jerome's example of how conscious capitalism actually delivers profits to his company's bottom line? Or I should say his companies, plural, bottom lines, plural, because they have quite a few companies. He said that he invested in a business at the airport that created jobs and had an outsized positive impact on the community in which that investment was made. At the same time, he could directly point to how much money his business made from that investment. And I really hope that you take away from this interview and this example that conscious capitalism really, no kidding, is making the Herman Russell family of companies more profitable. And of course, if you want to do the same thing, you should come join us at a conscious capitalism event. You should check out our website. You should subscribe to our newsletter, because we want every CEO, business owner, and business leader running their businesses this way. You know, who doesn't want to make more money from doing great things and investing in communities and having those communities create jobs and lifting people up economically? Who doesn't want to do that? So please rate and review this episode on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Send it to a friend or colleague. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm always interested in your feedback. And of course, this wraps up our time together on Capitalism Done Right, brought to you by CEO Exclusive and Conscious Capitalism Atlanta. Are you still listening? If you are, I have a few more thoughts for you. Okay, in the episode with Chris Clark, which I hope you listen to that one too, he and I spoke about how business can be a totally transformative, positive force, as evidenced by the Atlanta Way. And then in this episode with Jerome, you hear us talking about the dollars and cents of that. And in fact, our team had a long conversation with Jerome afterwards about beginning to measure these profits and make the case for conscious capitalism economically to other business leaders in the city. So I hope you heard in both interviews this evolution towards using capitalism to fix problems, which in fact it's always done, but we just want to raise that to the level of consciousness, which is what conscious capitalism is, right? You know, problems like the ideological divide or income inequality. Listen, when we do that, when we as people and business leaders come together around solving problems and come together around shared values, anything and everything is possible, about which I am very hopeful and very excited. So stay tuned in a couple weeks for the follow-up interview with Chris Clark, where hopefully we discuss this a little bit more. But that's all for now. Until next time, like Jerome, go out and do something great, amazing, and transformative in the world with your business.